Florida Basketball, our podcast, is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Lockermania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Graham Hall, 24/7 Sports, is going to join us. He's going to get into Florida and their win, 102-98 win over Georgia in overtime this weekend in Zach Tech Arena. Gators, man, what a game. Florida got up by 21. Looked like they were going to kind of walk away. Georgia started making every three-pointer they took. Florida started playing terrible interior defense. And before you know it, it was tied. Georgia actually had a chance to win at the end of the game. Florida got a steal by Will Richard, one of their only defensive stops the last 10 minutes of the game. And then the Gators win in overtime, 102-98, really with some just big-time buckets from Zion Pullen mainly. So a huge one for Florida, who improves to 4-3 in the SEC with the win. It was actually a quad three win, but what I will say about it is that, in the end, I think for the Gators, look, they managed, I think most importantly, to, hold serve at home, which is what you have to do in this league this season. I think there's almost no chance of teams, I don't think there's a chance of teams going to the NCAA tournament that lose multiple games in this league on their home floor. I think if you lose more than two on your home floor in this league, you're going to be cooked in terms of your NCAA resume, because it's just going to be so hard to get road dubs. And Florida still has, I think, two huge tests coming up at home, with Auburn on February 10th and with Alabama later in the campaign. So, look, this was just not one that the Gators could afford to lose, and they managed to get the victory, which I think is huge. When we get Graham on, we'll talk a little bit about just the fact that, it obviously was dicey for the Gators, but what went down in the comeback? And then I think importantly, what lessons Florida can take from it, how Todd Golden and the staff are looking at it. I know I have one staff member say, obviously it never should have gotten to that point, but of course they were happy to get out of there with the win. And, at the end of the day, that's the name of the game, is to get dubs. And I think it's a good Georgia team. And I said this on the Patreon, that's a good team that Florida beat. It's a team that, Florida, that it's a team that has wins over NCAA tournament caliber opponents. They won at South Carolina, who I think most people think is very safely in the NCAA tournament field. They beat Wake Forest, who beat Florida. They won in Tallahassee against Florida State, who it turns out appears to be a team that's much, much improved, especially comparatively to last year. Whether or not a bubble is in Florida State's future kind of remains to be seen, but certainly the Seminoles and winning in Tallahassee is no joke. North Carolina just struggled to do the same thing that Georgia was able to do. So I think from that standpoint, you have to look at the fact that Georgia has yet to lose to a team that is either not a bubble team like Florida or safely in the NCAA tournament field. And, the dogs can play. And Florida did it their way. I mean, they did it despite 19 turnovers, which is ugly. I can talk to Graham a little bit about that. But they won by dominating the glass, by getting to the free throw line. And then, you know, fortunately for Florida, they made their free throws. They, you could argue, won the game because they made free throws, shooting 17 of 20 from the charity stripe on a day when Georgia was 9 of 17. You know, you could point at free throws and say, hey, if Georgia hits some, they probably win. But that's not how this thing went. Just two spectacular individual performances as well. Micah Handlockton, obviously, with 23 and 17, the first 20 and 15 effort for a Florida fan or for a Florida player since Kerry Blackshear did it with against Alabama in the COVID season and 2020. And then Zion Pullen was just marvelous. Again, 6 of 9 from the floor, 7 or 8 from the stripe, 20 points, 8 rebounds, 7. 8 assists, 7 rebounds. So Florida with the triple double, like just a spectacular game for Zion Pullen, who continues to be just maybe Florida's best player, certainly one of the best guards in the SEC, leading the SEC in assist to turnover ratio. He's a special guy. And with him driving the Florida offense, even on a day when Florida had 19 turnovers, you know, you look at how efficiently Florida scored despite all the turnovers. You know, it's not often you turn the ball over 19 times and you get 1.21 points per possession. But that's where the Gators were. Just a spectacular number. Florida up to 13th now nationally in offensive efficiency. And we've reached a point now where, like, that's not just because Florida dominates the glass. Like, yes, it helps that Florida gets second chances. But, like, the stuff that Florida runs, they're running quite well. You know, I mean, they carved up a good defense, Miss State, to the tune of 1.2. per possession. The last time they played Kentucky, you know, they were at 104, which isn't awesome, but it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. They had 1.15 points per possession against a pretty darn good Ole Miss team on the road. They had over a point, 1.2 points per possession against Arkansas. So, like, Florida is solid offensively right now. They're playing good offense, and they're doing it because of Zion Pullen really running the show, and they're doing it because most nights Will Richard is playing like a guy with his hair on fire, and they're doing it because even when Walter Clayton kind of checks out, he's prone to these quiet spells in games other than his performance art pick six passes that he sometimes tosses. I think, you know, Walt Clayton is a guy who is still going to hit 3 or 4 big jump shots a game. So, yeah, I mean, I think Florida's offense is obviously reaching kind of elite status for all the grumbling and concerns about it maybe earlier in the season as we welcome in Graham Hall, 24/7 Sports. And so the question I think for Florida down the stretch is, like, how do you get stops?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this is a team that has done a good job, I think, at being aggressive for the first 30 minutes of the game and just the pace that they play with, especially when the lead gets up to, you know, 15, 17, as we've seen here in some recent weeks. You know, they have a little bit of a tendency to catch their breath and slow it down in the half court and still get out in transition. But when they do get into transition, take their time with the shot clock. And I understand the way people are looking at that is taking their foot off the aggressiveness type thing. But this is a coach that has stressed the value of analytics repeatedly. And when you get up 15 in a game in the second half, up with 8 minutes to go, I think it behooves you to really be, you know, mindful of limiting the other chances for the opponent to come back. And I think that that is where some of this comes into play. Certainly, this is a team that can improve defensively, especially with their effort in close games, I think, and away from Gainesville, certainly. But I don't really think that seeing them, you know, blow double-digit leads in SEC games, I can understand why there would be some concern there. But I do think it's just one of the potential, I don't want to really call it a repercussion, but it's a side effect of the way that Florida plays, the style of play that they have. And obviously you're going to want to attempt to limit that moving forward, but you do have to give some credit to the other teams. You know, I mean, Mississippi State was able to hit some threes down the stretch that they had not hit through the start of that game. They were really playing with their backs against the wall. They had nothing to lose. And the same thing in that Georgia game, you know, Georgia did make some changes defensively in the second half that I think you should give them some credit for, how they defended, you know, ball screens, how they were, you know, hedging, I think was definitely a little bit different in the final 10 minutes of that game. And I do think, you know, again, give them some credit for pulling that off. And then they played really aggressive, up-tempo, hit some shots down the stretch. Blue Kane, I thought he actually, you know, had a really impactful second half. I mean, you know, the guy was all over the court. He was hard to defend when he was out there. He was making the extra pass, driving to the rim aggressively. You play a team like that who is able to rally. I think that obviously it can be a little bit concerning for you when it happens to you, but you know, give them some credit. This is that was a Georgia team inside the top 80 of the net rankings. They're not the bottom dweller SEC, you know, Georgia that we've seen in recent years. They're a respectful team. That they lost by 6 to Tennessee, a team that blew Florida out again, you know, on its home court for sure. They got a good win over South Carolina. It's not, I think, that bad when you look at their resume, and for Florida to pull that game off in overtime, I thought was actually, you know, very impressive as well, because they could have been, you know, hanging their heads and upset that they let the team come back and having to play 5 extra minutes. But I think that, you know, for Florida to close it out and regain their aggressiveness, score the first, you know, go on a 7-1 run to open overtime and never trail in that overtime period, you know, give some credit to them for that. Of course, I don't think it really is that big of an indictment of Florida as a whole, but certainly there are some things for this team to work on.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those games where, like, I don't know how valuable or productive it might have been for Florida to just handily win this game by 25 to 30 and go up to Rupp. Like, I think there's probably some value in being way ahead and then figuring out, really for the second straight home game, that you can't just play defense for 30 minutes. And one thing that's staggering to me, Graham, and I'm sure, you know, I'm sure this staff has been talking till they're blue in the face about it to their players, but like, Georgia had 47 points through 29 minutes. Florida's holding them to under a point per possession. Miss State game, under 50 through 29 minutes, Florida's holding them to under a point per possession. And like, yeah, like Miss State, to some extent, the ball started to go in. They weren't, I think Florida would, you could argue that Florida's defensive performance from like a shots prevented standpoint and like forcing bad and tough shots was better against Georgia than it was against Miss State. Some of that had to do with how Florida had to defend Tolu Smith and how everybody has to defend Tolu Smith. Like, teams that play Miss State are going to get – Miss State's going to get open threes because teams adjust to Tolu Smith. Eventually, Chris Jans will recruit to where, you know, hopefully if he still has a big like Tolu, good luck. They'll make those shots. But my point is, yeah, I mean, I think Florida's taken their foot off the accelerator defensively, and I think that's kind of what, you know, you were there for these – discussions that Golden was having, but I mean, when you read his comments, it's sort of like, it seems like one thing he's saying is, you know, yeah, we play fast, so naturally, you know, games are going to ebb and flow a little more when there's more possessions, but he also wants his guys to understand that, you know, in the SEC you have to put 40 minutes together. Like, Florida's interior defense, and I think that was probably what was most disappointing, is not that like RJ Melendez and Justin Hill and Blue Kane hit a few shots. It's that dribble penetration that was hard all game became easy. It's that, you know, the physicality from Micah Hanlockton that gets you to 23 and 17 was lacking, and Russell Sheshwa goes like 5 of 5 on twos in the second half. So like, that's probably where I think Florida has to look for consistency, is figuring out how to play 40 minutes. Cause I still think the sum of all parts with this team defensively is better than the product.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think that they again, have to work on, yeah, like you said, playing defense for 40 minutes. And I think a lot of it, there are some excusable aspects. You know, when you get up a lead that large, you're going to want to go to your bench a little bit. You're going to want to play extended minutes to guys like, you know, Alex Condon, Tommy Haw, units that haven't really been on the floor together. You know, we haven't, especially during non-conference play, didn't see that tandem of Micah Hanlogs and Alex Condon out there together for long spurts. I mean, that's two underclassmen forwards who do give up a little bit of size and even some agility, some lateral quickness in the paint and area. And, you know, when you face some athletic bigs, guys who are bigger than you, and you also have a team filled with shooters, you're going to get beaten one way or the other. You know, you mentioned the Mississippi State game, how Florida was able to defend Tolu Smith really after the under 16 timeout of the first half. You know, he was doing some damage in the beginning earlier in that game, and Florida closed down the paint, I think did a good job at bringing guys off the baseline and making them, you know, drive to the rim from the corner. And I think that they really did a good job of limiting what he would do. You know, I mean, he's a good passer out of the double, especially. But if, you know, you can live and die with a team like that, that came in shooting, you know, like 30% from three-point range beating you, you know, some of those are going to go in, but really you'd rather, you know, make them beat you in that regard than Tolu Smith, who everyone knows how good he is, then allow him to go off, you know, a predictable situation. You don't really want that. So they allowed, you know, Mississippi State a chance to knock down some shots, and they did down the stretch there. I guarantee if that had been the way things had gone earlier in the contest, they would have altered their defense a little bit more there down the stretch. You know, this is a team that a lot of young guys, like I said, Riley Kugel, especially late game situations, as much of a bucket as he can be. I do think his decision making, his, you know, even his fatigue in late game situations, I do think for as good of an athlete as he is, that there's still room for him to grow, to play with that level of intensity at both ends down the stretch in games. You know, when you know, you see him standing in a corner for an extended period of time, just trying to catch his breath on the offensive end, I do think that's in part to allow him to play at a high level on the defensive end. But you really can't, I think, have a lot of that in the second half in close contests. And also his decision making late, when it's a two possession game, he can be a little bit prone to some errant passes, some unwise decisions. And you take him off the court because you want to limit that. You're taking, you know, your best driver to the rim with the basketball off the floor, and you're often going to be a little bit undersized in the backcourt as a result when you don't have him out there. You know, Wilt Richard gives you some great size at the three, a guy who's able to rebound, and aid your rebounding efforts, which is absolutely important to this team. But when they're turning the ball over at a higher rate, giving up some size in the backcourt, and when they are absolutely playing a team that has a really talented four, like they did, you know, in Mississippi State, this is a team that can allow the opposition to come back a little bit when they hit some shots. And I think you've just seen that recently the past couple of games. And it has led to questions about Florida's overall defensive prowess. I think that they're valid, because when you get down into, if they make it to March into the NCAA tournament, you know, you're going to go cold one day. And if you don't have a staunch defensive performance, you're more often than not going to lose that game. So it makes me think a little bit more big picture than what it means for Florida right now, because ultimately we're talking about some defensive lapses and in games where Florida was able to win. And if you ask any coach in the SEC if they'd be okay with giving up some significant runs or winning a close game, of course, over losing a close game, they're obviously going to tell you, what, are you crazy? We're going to take a win every single day of the, you know, season here, no matter who the opponent is. And I think that there's so much talent in the SEC, just from, you know, obviously a player perspective, but a coaching perspective, that sometimes you're just going to end up, you know, it's a game of runs. You're going to fall victim to some, and you're going to go on some yourself. And I think Florida's been, you know, the victim of giving up some impressive runs by several teams and some very impressive performances, you know, from Dalton to obviously, it's blanking on me now, right now, you know, and obviously Melendez, the latest one.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of. Tamar Bates, you know, that's four guys right there who, you know, half of them you would expect to go off in the game, but the other half you're going to just, sometimes it's going to happen to you. Someone who hasn't had a really great game is going to have one against you. It doesn't mean, I think, that you're a poor defensive team. I don't think that's what Florida is, but certainly there's some room for improvement.
Yeah, I think a couple of places, and you mentioned Riley Kugel. I'm glad about that you brought that up, because I think that's just one that I think intrigues the fans, and I don't think that the fans are ill-intentioned in wondering kind of what's going on. It's clear that there's a sophomore slump on the offensive end. I think, you know, you look back at that little slip pass that he made early in the Georgia game, where he hit Condon on the slip and then Condon hit Haw on the cut, and they got a dunk, one of the prettier possessions of the year. And like, when Riley's engaged and making the right reads, which I think is happening more offensively, it's good. And obviously his defensive numbers most of the year have been really good on the ball. You know, he got roasted by Dalton Kinect, who's roasted everyone, and who he gives up 2 inches to. But I think, you know, they've been able to put him out there and put him on people who are good. But again, he was on the floor down the stretch against Miss State. He was not on the floor late in the Georgia game. And I think that it just seems like that's what the staff's going to do. They're going to determine if Riley's making good decisions and if he's engaged, and if he is, then they're going to roll the dice with him. And if not, then it looks like they're going to go with Condon or Hanlockton or whoever else they think is going to give them the best chance to win down the stretch, which really is what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't think it's a bad decision whatsoever. You know, I think that Riley Kugel, a lot to like about his game from an offensive standpoint. And I think he maybe doesn't even get, you know, fully appreciated for how good defensively he has got.
Right. Yeah.
With the amount of players on this team that are capable of scoring at a high rate, you know, especially from 3-point range, I think that Riley is a little less needed as a scorer this year than he was last year, especially when you saw his stretch towards the end of the last season came with Colin Castleton out. You know, someone needed to pick up the scoring load, and Riley Kugel was the guy, you know, along with Will Richard. I think this year, Todd Golden said it repeatedly throughout the offseason that it's not going to be the same guy who goes off every single night. It could be Will. It could be Walter Clayton. It could be Zion. It could be Riley. It could be Tyrese Samuel. It could be Micah Hanlockton, who had led the team in scoring with 23 points and had the most rebounds by a Florida player since Alex Tyus, you know, 13 years. It could be any one of these guys at any given night. They even feel confident that Denzel Aberdeen is capable of, you know, having a 15-5 performance at some point this season. Riley is not necessarily the go-to scorer, and that's not how it was designed for him coming into the year. He was going to be a key part of this team, absolutely, but they were going to run a lot of things through other players. And part of, I think that, you know, no longer being in, you know, anonymity in a sense here is a factor as well. It's hard to quantify that, but everyone knows how good Riley Kugel is. You know, preseason all SEC, he is often going to be the number one, you know, guy on every team's scouting report going into the game. The key is to take him out of the game. You don't want to give up 20 plus points to Riley Kugel because you know how good he is. He still, in my opinion, is the best athlete on this team. I do think that Florida would like him to capitalize on that a little bit more, be more aggressive in driving to the rim, taking advantage of mismatches, drawing contact around the rim, getting to the free throw line, not settling for, like I said, kind of standing in the corner for the majority of the shot clock or hoisting up 30-foot three-pointers at the end of it. I think that they understand that that's not his best attribute. You know, he's not Will Richard when it comes to hitting deep threes for this team. He's great at driving to the rim, especially with force. I would make a case that he's the best on the team at that. And this offense is very designed around getting shots open on the perimeter. and less so on, I think, having guys win one-on-one matchups where they get the ball in their hands and get set up for an ISO play and make a, you know, a charge at the rim. You know, that is less so, I think, what this offense is designed for than what some people would, I think it should be designed around, just given what Riley Kugel's skill set is. And that's just, in my opinion, going to lead to more fluctuations in his breakout performance. Now, someone could obviously look at him and say, hey, you know, you don't necessarily want the same guy going off every single night. You want to have a balanced scoring load, and you really want the opponent to have to, you know, be mindful of everyone out there on the court. When Florida has the backcourt duo that they have, when Riley Kugel and Will Richard are out there, Tyrese Samuel is out there, who's able to, you know, score around the rim through double teams, but also can space you out a little bit and affect how teams are going to play you and bring the five out of the paint, because he is a threat to shoot from the mid-range and sometimes from three-point range. This is a team that is very, very hard to beat, and any one of those guys could go out there and get a bucket. And just because it's not Riley Kugel every single night, I don't think that is reason for people to criticize the season that he's had so far. But there is clearly some things that he needs to work on, and I think that of everything I just said, number one is his decision-making late in games. If he can become an even better passer, take better care of the basketball, because Florida, like I said, absolutely puts a premium on not having double-digit turnovers in games. Yeah, you know, if you'd asked Todd Golden what was the most frustrating part of that Georgia game, it was how much they turned the ball over. And when they can limit turnovers, this team can be really, really good. And as long as they're winning, as long as they're taking care of the ball, I don't really think they care too much who is the one who is going off on a given night. And I think that Riley Kugel as well, you know, the guy just wants to win ultimately, even when it's not his night, when he's not playing the final 8 minutes of a game. If Florida ends up winning that game, I'm sure that he's okay.
Well, no, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one thing that a staff member told me after the Georgia game was, you know, Riley is like lead cheerleader in the locker room after both these wins. And I think people might be surprised to hear that, because he's a kid that wears his emotions on his sleeve. And so you hear a lot of, you know, oh, his body language sucks and this and that. And, you know, and remember there was the game where Golden said, well, we weren't on the same page. Well, I mean, I can tell you, part of not being on the same page is like when they do run stuff for him, it's to do what you were talking about. Like, it's so that he can get a screen and attack the basket and either dish or get fouled or go to the free throw line. And they're not worried that, because if he makes, he's shooting 68% at the line. So if he shoots that percentage, that's still an efficient possession, right? Like, if you make 68% of your free throws, then that's over a point per possession. So that's efficient to Todd, right? And what he doesn't want is him rejecting ball screens three times in a row and then either turning the ball over with a bad pass or taking a step back three from 25 feet that hits the rim barely and results in a transition look for the other team. Like, I think when those things happen, Todd Golden gets upset. It's not Riley has a bad attitude. It's not Riley's body language is shitty. It's like we're coaching him to do certain things, and when he's not doing them, you know, I'm going to sit him down because I don't have time for this. Like, we're trying to win games. And, you know, you can talk about buy-in. You can talk about that being a product of sophomore frustration. I don't know. I don't want to speculate into any of that. But I think, to your point, you know, it's they want these players to do what they're best at, and they're putting, when they put them in a position to succeed and they do things like reject ball screens over and over again, that's not, you know, executing what's being asked. And I think that that gets Riley into some trouble, and that speaks to the decision-making, I think, that you're talking about. And Florida needs to make good decisions. That, you know, it's hard to win when you turn it over 19 times. Like, Florida had 12 second half turnovers. That had a lot to do with Georgia's comeback, you know, and you can credit Georgia with some of that. And, you know, if those of us that have covered Mike White teams have seen that movie 1,000 times where they get way behind and make a furious comeback and still lose. Like, so none of that was particularly new to Florida fans. Maybe the scale of it happening from 21 points was pretty intense. But I think, you know, yeah, I mean, in terms of just, look, I mentioned this right before you hopped on. I mean, Florida had a staggering over a point, 1.2 points per possession in this game, in a game where they had 19 turnovers. Like, that's how well the offense is running, which leads me to, like, the two players I wanted to kind of single out for the other day. Obviously, Micah Handlocked him with 23 and 17. Like, a monstrous day. The first Florida with a 20 and 15. Florida player with a 20 and 15 since Kerry Blackshear, who was pretty good. And then Zion Pullen, who I think right now would probably be the first team All-SEC point guard.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think that there maybe has just been one game where he hasn't scored in double figures. And yeah. Todd Golden said a few weeks ago that for the second straight year that maybe we should have started him from the beginning of the year. You know, go back to last year, even Florida tinkered with their starting lineup, I think 5-6 times by this point in the season here. You saw, you know, Myron Jones in and out of the starting rotation. They were continuing to assess it as the season went on. And I think Todd has been, you know, okay admitting that maybe he should have been playing Pullen in the starting rotation from the minute he got back. Obviously, that 3-game suspension to start the season, you know, put a little bit of a wrench in those plans. And it's hard to, I think, demote someone after a guy returns, you know, even if you think that you can get a little bit higher level of play out there. Obviously, they wanted to give Riley, the way he started the season too, a little bit of a longer leash to keep going. But let me just say this real quick, and I hope that this is not controversial for anyone out there, and I'm not trying to criticize anyone in any way for doing this, but I do kind of roll my eyes a little bit at the whole Riley Kugel body language narrative right now. I mean, do you want the guy just to smile on the court the entire time? Do you want him to, you know, he's very stoic. You even look at the media image that went around of his father sitting at the game, really a similar facial expression where, you know, both those guys smile all the time. You know, Riley smiles all the time. It's not that he's not happy. He's engaged in every practice. Everything I hear out of the Florida program is that Riley has had some great practice sessions. He's a hard worker. Like what you just said, he's happy for his teammates. You know, that's the stuff that seems like unfair nitpicks, low-hanging fruit, unfair right. criticisms that can really give, not to speak on this too much, but can give a fan base a bad reputation. Everything you just mentioned about the room to grow, the turnovers, the better decision making, how he, you know, plays at some points in games, that is stuff that is, I think, more fair than talking about his body language and assuming that the guy is unhappy with his role or isn't happy when Florida wins but he's not the leading scorer. That just is,
yeah,
I don't really buy into all of that. I don't think we have any evidence to see that he's unhappy. This isn't a situation where, like previous teams where I've covered, where, you know, there's a problem between a player and a coach. And,
right.
You know, the kid's father comes down to address the coaching staff about his role. This is not a type of situation like that. You know, Florida and Riley Kugel are on the same page. And just because he's not having the type of performances maybe that he wants or is being the go-to scorer every single night, you know, that's not really, I think, I'm not making the leap to him being discontent in any way. I think that Riley Kugel will tell you that he understands that he has room to grow. No underclassman in the SEC right now is a perfect player. I think that if anything, he is maybe dealing with how much of a high expectation there is on him. Everyone expects him to go for 20 points every single night. And I think that when you don't do that, people are going to be quick to say, oh, you had a bad game. You weren't playing up to your level of your capabilities. And maybe I think it's possible that he doesn't, you know, he's dreading hearing that type of stuff, or people are going to judge him by the box score or where he was during the final few minutes of a game, rather than look at the plays that he's out there, see that there's a lot to like, there's room for improvement, and understand that this is an underclassman playing in the highest level of competition, in my opinion, in college basketball, with enormous expectations in the most loaded period, arguably in college basketball history, still coming out of the post-COVID era where guys have a sixth, sometimes even a seventh year. Yeah. And we're expecting this second year guy who's played, what, 40 games at the college level to be a 20 points per game scorer on every given night. That is enormous expectation that, in my opinion, is not really realistic for the majority of the time for him. And when you set such a high bar for someone, when they realize that they're maybe not going to reach unfair expectations more often than not, that can be a frustrating thing to deal with. But thinking that he's upset with his role or anything like that, that's a little bit of a leap. And if you're judging that just based off his body language, I guarantee he's got some emotion. You know, look at that. Look at the Georgia game where he got into it with Abdul Rahim in the middle of the game there. You know, the right. guy is clearly emotionally invested in winning, protecting his teammates, playing his best out there on the floor. And you're not getting this guy who's overly upset or emotional or upset, you know, when he gets taken off the floor. You're not seeing any, in my opinion, negative signs from him from a body language standpoint. People are just want to see a little more emotion from him. And then they're saying the little lack of emotion is automatically the sign of someone who has poor body language. That's a little bit of a leap in my mind. And I do think that that can quell, if that could just be dismissed a little bit, because we haven't seen too much to really back that up from a what we're hearing behind the scenes standpoint.
Yeah. And I mean, you don't really, it's just interesting to me. Like, you haven't heard or seen it as much with like Micah Hanlockton. Instead there, it's like, oh, well, maybe he's not physical enough for the SEC yet, you know, when his minutes were declining. And now he comes out and plays obviously a season high 35 minutes against Georgia and scores in double figures and really just for the second time in league play, Hanlockton. But I think, you know, they're getting from him what they want. And this staff has shown with this that they're comfortable with this 8 or 9 man rotation. Like, they're going to play hot hands and they're going to get those guys on the floor. So, you know, Riley's going to have his nights. And obviously, if they can get him going, he certainly is, if not the most talented player on the team, one of the most talented players. And, you know, I know they'd love to get him going maybe as quickly as tomorrow night, as we record on a Tuesday, against Kentucky, who is not by any stretch of the imagination an invincible Kentucky team. They've lost at home to UNC Wilmington, in fact. Now they have a couple of nice wins at home. They beat Miami, who I think is another bubble team, but probably headed to the NCAA tournament. They hammered them at home. They obviously hammered Miss State on their home floor. You know, and then they have, you know, one of the best wins of the country this year in their win over North Carolina in Atlanta. So they also are healthy for the first time since really before they played Florida, because Adu Thoreau came back against Arkansas, and we've seen Florida have trouble against physical wings, which is what Adu Thoreau offers at 6'8", 222, not a big offensive skill set guy, but a guy that can drive you and get into the paint. And then, you know, we will see, I guess, what they get from Zonimir Avisic. Look, I think the thing with Avisic is, like, probably, you know, if he plays well to start, then Cal will roll with him. And if he doesn't, then he'll play 3 to 4 minutes and that'll be that. And, you know, Florida has its hands full anyway, trying to deal with Trey Mitchell, who has crucified them at West Virginia and Kentucky now. You know, but certainly a different kind of front court than Florida has played, a deeper front court than Florida has played, and one that bullied the Gators in Gainesville.
Yeah, I'm really interested just to see, one, how much Big Z gets used up there in Lexington.
Right.
Because his ability to space the floor, even when he's not knocking down shots at a high rate, is going to alter the way that a team defends them, because you're going to have to bring guys out a little bit more to account for the fact that he can hit you from 27 feet. And against a team that is good at driving to the rim as well, has a deep front court, has multiple options where you have to keep in mind all their respective skill sets, that can be a tough assignment, especially for a front court that has, you know, three underclassmen in it, along with Tyrese Samuel. That can be a difficult task for a lot of these guys. I think the key tomorrow night, and maybe this is a little bit of a prediction, is Will Richard in my mind. You know, Will Richard goes 0-for-8 against the Wildcats back there to open SEC play after a scorching month in December where he was 44% from three-point range. Florida had won 6 games in a row coming into that.
Yeah.
And then he just was off the mark. You know, that's going to happen to shooters, as you know, no matter how impressive they are. It's not an indictment of someone, but you have Will Richard once again, who is just in a great flow right now. He's making plays away from the basketball. He is doing a really good job at being in position to get a defensive rebound and start the break. I think he does a really good job of that, finding the right pass to get out in transition. And he's moving really, really well, both with the basketball and without the basketball, which I think that was maybe something that flew under the radar a little bit last year, was that he did still have some room to grow when it came to moving his feet, getting in position, driving to the rim. He's a really good cutter without the basketball, but driving to the rim with the ball was something that I think left a little bit to be desired. He gets in improved shape from last season. I think he, you know, changed his lean muscle mass, lost a little bit of weight, got faster, and he's moving better and more confidently. And I think that he's able to do more things out there on the court, just the shape that he is in. That is, I think, something that has maybe gone a little bit unnoticed, but it's really something the Gators are benefiting from right now. I think if he manages to be a factor, hits down some open shots, this is a game that is very winnable for Florida, even though Kentucky looks a little bit different. I think, again, the big thing is to see how much Zvonimir is a factor in that contest. If he ends up having a performance like he did against Georgia, Florida could certainly be in some trouble, just how many pieces they are going to have to contend with up there in Lexington. But if Will Richard plays at a high rate and Big Z is not much of a factor in that contest, you know, you just got to beat the Wildcats and then the 24,000 people in Rupp Arena and then the officials. So
That's all, Graham. I will agree in part and add Tyrese Samuel to the mix. And, you know, I think in Seton Hall's win over Connecticut last year, who eventually won the national title, it was like a tale of two games for Reese. Like in their loss to UConn, he was nowhere to be found. In their win over UConn, he had 9 points, 7 rebounds, drew 6 fouls, fouled clinging out, had 2 blocks, had 3 steals. Like, you know, he can handle Trey Mitchell. There's no reason that matchup isn't one that Tyrese Samuel can get the better of. He did not in Gainesville. He had his worst game as a Gator. I think he'd tell you that. He had 3 points. I think Florida also kind of, and Todd Golden said, we didn't do enough good enough job of trying to force him to be involved. But, you know, 3 points, 7 rebounds, you know, just wasn't effective. 4 fouls, 5 turnovers, which was a season high. And, you know, Tyrese Mitchell, 8. And so, you know, that was part of that lopsided front court game. And you're right, like Florida wins anyway, despite their front court getting beaten by Kentucky, which I think surprised everybody. You know, if Will hits a couple shots, but if Florida gets good Tyrese and Will Richard makes shots, there's no reason that Florida can't have a chance to win this game. And I think, you know, if you keep looking at this bracketology, or, you know, as you start to get to February, it gets a little more accurate and serious. And like Florida's still sort of on the outside looking in. I mean, only a handful of brackets have Florida in the field, and that makes sense because their best wins are, you know, either to bubble teams or to teams that are almost bubble teams like Miss State. So, you know, Florida needs a win like this, I think, to give them you know, a little more security and stable footing in the bubble conversation. And also, like, I mean, again, because Florida's schedule kind of softens after the Auburn game, obviously there's the two Alabama games that loom after that. But otherwise, like, this is the three-game stretch that is scary. And, you know, if Florida somehow won two of these games, they'd still be in a position to compete for the SEC championship. Now, if they win one of them, probably not, but certainly they'll feel better about their bubble situation if they win any of these three. You lose all three and, well, you've just blown like three really good opportunities to get your resume win that you need, and then you better beat Alabama down the stretch or you're probably not going to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they're going to need a quadrant one win here sooner than later. I know that sounds obvious, but starting 0-6 in quadrant one games, got a ton of two quadrant two wins. Obviously, some of their prior wins could still shake out into quadrant one wins. You know, if Richmond wins a couple games, you know, several situations like that, that could absolutely right. aid Florida. But they're going to need to win some of these games. So to either win one at home, whether it's against Auburn in a couple of weeks or go on the road and beat Kentucky, you name it, beat Texas A&M, I think that that'll absolutely solidify their case, because right now I think that a lot of people can see that this is a good team, not a perfect team, certainly, but they're a team that realistically is in the NCAA tournament conversation if they can win some of these games against top-tier competition and solidify their case. If they don't, they're going to look like a team that was just kind of on the cusp of greatness, where they were able to handle the above-average good teams, but when it came to playing great teams, they consistently fell short, and it made the situations against, you know, losing close games against Virginia, obviously losing to Baylor, you know, those were games that Florida would have liked to have come out on the other side of, because at this point in time in the middle of SEC play, you wouldn't really be talking so much about their resume. If you look at the start that they've had, obviously, I don't know how many teams are going to beat Tennessee and Knoxville this year, but if you can win a road game in the SEC, get a win like that, that's going to go a long way to improving your tournament chances. And Florida still has some work to do. And if they can do that tomorrow night in Lexington, I think that they're going to start getting a lot of the respect around the country that many people think that they deserve.
Yeah. I mean, the computers still love Florida. It's interesting to look at like Bart Torvik and see like how close Florida is to Kentucky in most every way. I mean, these are fairly evenly matched teams. Obviously Kentucky's at home and they won, in Gainesville, but you know, Florida's got two wins in their last six trips to Rupp, which believe it or not is a much better percentage than historically. So, you know, who knows, maybe Florida will have an opportunity to beat Kentucky and get the big win that they really need before they travel to College Station, where, you know, Buzz Williams and maybe a equally desperate Texas A&M team will be waiting at home. So, Graham, appreciate your time today. You know, we'll get you back when Eric gets back from sipping Mai Tais on the Iberian Peninsula.
Jealous. He's having a good time. I hope he's enjoying it. He's been working hard for the last year, and it's always good to see him get some appreciation, but yeah, we all gonna link back up here on here pretty soon.
No doubt. Appreciate you. Graham Hall, everybody, 24/7 Sports. Make sure you continue to follow his excellent work covering all things Florida basketball, football, you know, follow it.
Thanks, man. Always my pleasure. Hope everyone's doing well out there. Should be a good one tomorrow night.
All right, buddy. So, yeah, it's great to have Graham Hall. You guys know where to find him on Twitter, I hope. Let me see. Just make sure I get all that out there for Graham, though. Yeah, at Graham Hall, pretty easy. So make sure you follow him and check out all his work. You know, I mentioned Bart Torvik, Kentucky's 23rd, Florida's 29th. Florida's 11th in offense in its last 10 games. Kentucky's 9th. So, like, two really efficient offenses. Florida's in the 100s in defense, 127th in their last 10. Kentucky is 121st. So, like, two teams that are kind of struggling defensively to guard, but scored a high level. Obviously, Kentucky's at home, so Torvik has it as a Kentucky win by six. which is not terribly far from how KenPom has it pegged. They have it as a 6-point Kentucky win as well. Both teams, both metric systems have it as a pretty high scoring game. You mentioned Big Z. Let's see if, you know, how much he plays. He was not ready for the physical test that was Arkansas, so they didn't really play him. They went with Adu Thoreau, as I mentioned, who had 1 point but had 6 rebounds and really changed the physicality for Kentucky in that game. And I thought it was just really a huge lift for the Cats as they came from way behind to beat Arkansas on the road. You know, Trey Mitchell has been their best front court player. He's been the guy they post up the most to offensively. They don't run a ton of post-ups for any of those bigs because, again, none of those guys are really natural post guys. 56 of their 65 post-up possessions have been Trey Mitchell post. So that's the guy they're going to. One thing that's fascinating to me is how much more pick and roll and ball screen Kentucky does this season. Like, they have run pick and rolls at a much higher clip. Last year, they only ran them compared to the rest of the country, 17% of possessions. This year, they have pick and roll or ball screen on 47% of their possessions. So, you know, really, really heavy in terms of how they attack you in the pick and roll. They score about a point per possession in it. They are not as good when it's DJ Wagner. They are magnificent in it when it's Reed Sheppard. You saw Florida have trouble chasing over those screens against Reed. And then, you know, Kentucky's bigs, particularly Mitchell and Bradshaw, do set good screens. Florida had struggled to chase over them. And then Condon and Samuel dropping too deep against those screens to give Kentucky kind of nice looks in the mid-range, which also set up their offensive rebounding, because those mid-range jumpers mean that oftentimes the shooter might retreat for floor balance reasons, but the bigs can kind of crash in a little easier and pick up those rebounds. You know, Florida won the rebounding battle last time by 5, but as John Calipari said, well, we won rebounds 41 to 43 or 41 to 46 or whatever it was, I guess. Very narrow. So I think, you know, certainly in terms of how Florida defends Kentucky, it'll be interesting to see if their pick and roll defense is improved, you know, and if they're able to handle that a little better. They had career nights from DJ Wagner and another great night against the Gators for Trey Mitchell. Again, I think that Samuel Mitchell matchup is just so critical. And then I think Micah Hanlockton is quite honestly, you know, super important. Micah was not ready for the physicality of that game the last time around. I mean, he did finish with 12 rebounds, to be fair, but, you know, he just wasn't effective in terms of being involved in the offense. He had a pretty bad turnover. He missed both his free throws. His offensive rating was the lowest on the team, other than Samuel and Richard, who we've already talked about how they had poor games. And, you know, I just think that, you know, he ends up only playing 17 minutes due to either foul trouble or his lack of ability to influence things offensively, to catch duck in balls. You know, his 3 turnovers included 2 drop passes that would have been scores. So, you know, Micah has responded to physical challenges. He's playing good basketball. We don't need double-digit points for him. We need, you know, 8 points, 12 rebounds, and good defense, physical defense from Micah. That's what we didn't get last game. That's how you end up with the team's lowest plus minus in the box of any player, which is where he was. And I think, you know, Florida needs a better output from Hanlockton. But those three players certainly will give Florida a chance tomorrow night. Be great to see the Gators compete, have a chance to win the game late. Go Gators. Keep attacking closeouts.